Welcome to the Perfume Room. My scent of the day today is new from Zoologist, and it is rabbit. This one is a journey, and it is one I want to take you on. Okay, for disclosure, I did receive a sample of this in PR, as well as samples of several other Zoologist scents, but this was definitely the standout for me in all the samples that I received. Rabbit feels like something I have seen in my dreams. It's what you imagine a scent called rabbit would smell like. It conjures fluffy bunnies at twilight and biscuits and carrots and leafy starchy vegetables, little burrows, but also fictional bunnies. Bunnies you read about in children's books. Bunnies who wear clothes. It evokes breads and jams. It's cottagecore in a bottle, but still with that sort of quirky, off-kilter, even a tad off-putting Zoologist DNA that keeps it just a hair away, pun intended, from being mass appealing. Despite its appeals of innocence and spring and fluffiness and bread, this fragrance still holds tension. This is one that I'm still getting to know, and each time I wear it, I glean something entirely new. To show you what I mean, I thought it would be fun to read you the notes that I've jotted down in my little perfume diary throughout the different times that I've worn it. Okay, this is from the first time. This is direct from the page. Feels like if something nutty, earthy, and sweet, maybe something like Oriza Elegrand Sheep Mousse, were mixed with the smell of Milk Bar cake balls or like sugar cookie dough. It's doughy in texture, doughy in smell, but like raw dough, almost flour-like, but also earthy, nutty, and gently sweet at the same time. Whoa. Okay, now here's what I wrote the second time I wore it. A little less poetic if I do say so myself. Sweet hay, wheat, plastic, apples. Okay. And here is what I'm getting today, right now, as I'm wearing it. Upon first spray, I'm hit with an overwhelming smell of bread and acetone. It's the kind of breadiness that people sometimes associate with gym socks. A smell that I get can be off-putting, but in the right dose is magical. Anyway, the breadiness feels kind of grounding to an otherwise, as I mentioned, sort of pitchy, fruity acetone smell. And the acetone gives the bread a sort of sharpness, and I feel like it performs similarly to how cardamom might. It adds like a little bit of structure, a little bit of pointiness, and as the acetone subdues, what emerges is a zesty but sweet feeling, one that smells similar to the smell of lemon poppy seed cake. It's desserty in the way that dessert you would eat for breakfast is desserty. It's not decadent, but it's like pastry-ish, bready, and sweet. There's a powderiness too that comes from a violet note that makes this sort of like fantasy lemon loaf that I'm building in my head have a feeling like it might have like a powdered sugar coating on its crust. Okay, so that is where we are upon first spray. We start with bready acetone and then we end with a lemon poppy seed loaf that has a powdered sugared crust. And as it opens and evolves, our pastry transforms because cinnamon and almond and carrot start to bloom and we move from lemon poppy seed loaf with a powdered sugar crust into spiced carrot cake. Now, the dessert in question is shifting, but I'm still at the same diner booth or bakery. Like, we're still in that same sort of world. An hour and a half later, we're in that dry down. What do you know? A new dessert comes in. The dry down for me is like an apricot jam thumbprint cookie. Would also accept Hamantash in here. But I say this because to me, this fragrance starts lemony, then it goes carroty, and then it ends in like apricot osmanthus peach territory. If you have smelled Fleur Apricot Privé, if you have smelled Sniff Natural Talent, or even something like Tom Ford Bitter Peach, that is where I'm at, just with a bready vanilla sort of doughiness underneath. I would also accept Peach Play-Doh. This scent fascinates me. It delights me. And yet, I still cannot perceive how I feel about this. I oscillate between like and love, honestly, sometimes neither, and honestly, sometimes both. I highly recommend ordering a sample of this one. It's weird, it's fun, it's whimsical, it's thought-provoking, and I'm so curious to hear your thoughts. Before we get to our guest today, I do have a little announcement, which is that Perfume Room is on spring break next week. We will be back with our regularly scheduled programming on April 23rd. Let's get to our guest. Today we are joined by the wonderful Givaudan perfumer, Christine Hassan. Christine has a really interesting background and one that, much like her career, is equal parts science and art. And you will hear more about that in our conversation. But there's something else really unique about Christine's career path, and it's something that I'm often asked and something that I really don't know the answer to, which is how to make a career pivot to become a perfumer. And what I've learned from talking to different perfumers is that if you are trying to make a career pivot to become a classically trained perfumer at a major fragrance house, good luck, because it's incredibly competitive, it's incredibly intense, it's incredibly arduous, incredibly difficult. But you know what? Christine did it. And to be fair, Christine did not make a full career pivot. She has always been in this industry and always with the intention of becoming a perfumer. In fact, she's a graduate of Azipka. But how she got there is not the obvious path, nor is it the common one. She's lived internationally, she's held multiple roles, she's worked across all categories. And if you have smelled fragrances like Wildly Me from Florence by Mills, which is the Millie Bobby Brown line, or Electric Sky from Tory Burch, maybe you've smelled Hinoki Phantom from Boy Smells, or Mellow Yellow from Anna Sui, Bella Vita from Guess, you have smelled just some of the magic that is a Christine Hassan creation. I really enjoy Christine and love this conversation, and I think you will too. Christine, hi, welcome to the Perfume Room. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. How are you?
I'm great. This is so exciting, Emma.
So, as you know, there are three questions I ask every guest to open the pod. The first of them being, what are you currently wearing today?
Lately I've been wearing Vanilla Sex.
Oh, the new Tom Ford one?
Yeah.
And do you get asked a lot what you're wearing? And you're like, it's called Vanilla Sex.
Yeah, it's actually really fun to answer that.
I love it. Okay. Do you have a sort of signature scent or scent profile? And I will also say that since you're a perfumer, you could answer this in terms of what you create as well.
Right. So I love wearing ambery, vanillas, very cocooning, musky scents. Mm-hmm. And as far as creating, I gravitate a lot towards woods and really fresh notes, natural, fresh, lush, watery. I just love playing with those notes, but I've had a lot of fun just exploring things where I'm not as comfortable. So I have a huge appreciation for florals right now.
Is floral like out of your comfort zone?
It's just such a big, huge, iconic family in mm-hmm. fragrance. So it's a big one to attack and to do it justice.
Where's your sweet spot? Is it like the soft florals, like the white florals?
Oh my God, they're all so truthfully intimidating, but they're fun. Love a good rose, love a narcotic white floral. And yeah, do we petally as well?
That's everything. We've covered all the bases. I love it. Okay, do you have a fragrance hot take or controversial opinion?
I think you could never have, your fragrance could never be strong enough. And, you know, I go heavy and I love it.
What does that mean to you? Because heavy could be different to different people.
You're right, because I think it's totally normal amount. But I spray about 10 sprays, like up and down, walk through it all over, in and out. And, you know, sometimes my friends are like, I could taste like what you're wearing. I'm like, good.
Good. I've achieved my goal then.
Yes.
Okay. I love that. Maximalist sprays. Mm. I remember meeting you first at the What is Love event several months back. And we had such a fun time going through everything together. But something that really struck me about our conversation was you were telling me sort of like how you have a very holistic background and foray into perfumery. So I thought it might be a fun starting place of where you started in this industry and maybe that journey of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I knew I really wanted to be in this industry. And I think I knew from an early age I wanted to create fragrance, whatever that meant. I didn't know there was a word perfumer for it, but I thought you had to be an engineer or something. So when I discovered this industry, I just took a job in marketing to get in my foot into it. And I fell in, obviously, was just in love with the industry right away. But even with marketing, I was just fascinated. And I love having that link with the consumer, a direct link, understanding how brands communicate to the customers, whether it's the ads or the bottle design, just everything, the whole package and the whole idea around a product.
Okay, so you started in marketing, and then you, I think you had mentioned you went to like the internal, I guess it was Drome at the time, right? Or
yes.
So now, but which was since acquired by Givaudan.
Yeah.
Was that hard to move into, like, what was it like being someone on the marketing team and then getting accepted into the perfumery program?
Yeah. So after marketing, I actually was in evaluation.
Okay.
So, and which, so my progression almost feels like very organic because I started off very close to the consumer. And then in evaluation, you're kind of the link between perfumery and the consumer and the market. So it was kind of a natural progression to evolve there. And really all my learnings from marketing really helped me out in evaluation to really understand what the consumer was looking for. And also kind of honing my skills on like communicating that in a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must be good for you as a perfumer to have a sense of the types of things that the evaluating team and the marketing team are going to be looking for from you in your creations.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for my evaluators and my marketing team because I've been there. I know it's hard. I know what they're doing. They bring so much to the table. So it's really just been a wonderful journey learning what they do. And I appreciate them even that much more.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, okay. So I was doing a little recon on you and I know that you had a dual major in college, which we'll get back to. But one of the things you studied was biochem. And then you went straight to ASIPCA. So you were mentioning from your childhood, you kind of knew this was your path. When you went to college and you studied biochem, was this all with the intention of like, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to go to ASIPCA after? Like how early on did you have this goal for yourself?
I mean, in high school, like I still remember my favorite lab day was when we had to synthesize benzaldehyde, which is a key molecule that gives you like this cherry almond note, and it exploded all over my notebook, which is like not the point, but I remember just loving that it was a fragrant molecule and like having that in my notebook, and I carried it to the next class. And I even talked to my teachers about it. And you know, in France, there's a penchant towards pushing you towards sciences. Mm-hmm. So
did you grow up in France?
No, I went to the French Lycée here in New York City.
Okay.
So I actually was in engineering school at the beginning.
Wow, okay.
And quickly I found out that was not for me. They're problem solvers, which I liked, but the creative points of views weren't always taken care of. It was how much faster can we make this go? How much more weight can this hold? And it's not like, well, like, you know, how do you make an elevator go quicker? Yeah, you can make it go quicker, or you could put a mirror in there and no one will notice how long it takes to get up.
Wow, okay. You know? Different ways of thinking.
Yeah, and that point of view wasn't always taken into account. So I think that's when I really decided to just switch to a biochem major that allowed me to do a dual major in art as well.
And then you knew right after you wanted to go to ASIPCA the whole time, or did you sort of have like this like moment where you're like, I gotta do this? Like, how did that come up?
Once I was in biochem, I started researching like what are the options to work with fragrance or scent. You know, it's still, I didn't know there was this whole industry out there. Mm-hmm. And it came up with this website. And I mean, back in the day, I haven't looked at their website lately, but like it did not even look like a real school. Like coming from America, I was like, what is this? Is mm-hmm. this a scam? So I reached out, you know, like with the phone and, but they were legit, and it, you know.
The fact that there was a number to call also speaks to the time that you'd be like, hello, like, I'm inquiring about your school.
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, the website was like nothing. But for a lot of people who don't have, you know, family or connections in the industry, it's your way in, basically. Right. Like, this education and also networking with the peers that do end up being your network in the industry.
So when you graduated, because I know you, going back to your career, you started in marketing. Did you feel you had the skills to be a perfumer at that point, or you just felt you had a wider breadth of knowledge?
No. So this whole journey was powered by pure self-belief.
You gotta have it.
Because there was no indication. You know, I like to smell. Did I know I was good at it. No, you know, who's going to tell you that? It's so subjective sometimes. But I knew I wanted to do it. And I knew I could work really hard. So those two things alone were like, okay, I'm going to give it a try.
Okay. I know we're just like harping on your background, but there's so much to dissect because you were a dual major. And what was your other major?
My other major was studio art, and I specialize in sculpture and cinematography there.
That's so cool. So yeah, are you still sculpting?
Oh, I wish. In New York, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And I loved working with bronze. So
cool.
You know.
How does one even work with bronze? Like, is it with like fire?
Yeah. So you sculpt your initial sculpture out of wax.
Okay.
And we used to do it kind of the old way, which was like this lost wax method. So then you bury your wax sculpture in sand and you evaporate the wax essentially. And then you pour bronze in like the emptiness.
It feels very archaic.
Yes. It was pretty cool. And then, you know, you have to polish it, work it with power tools, which was a whole new world for me because you have to be like very fit to operate those tools.
Yeah.
So I started actually working out to do sculpture.
What kind of exercise is the sculpture routine? Like just upper body workouts.
Okay. You know, like sawing metal.
People don't think about it. Like if you're making like really industrial sized sculpture, like you gotta do some CrossFit or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. So it's not something you're doing as much now, but are there things that you learned through sculpture that you feel like you've imparted onto your perfumery?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like the way you mold a sculpture is very similar in how you create a fragrance because you have a starting idea, you know, whether it's one ingredient or a little accord, and then you mold it, right? So you add to it, but the important lesson in sculpture is also taking away is just as important. So carving out and really knowing like this doesn't belong here. Let's just chuck it instead of trying to make it work.
Yeah, you're kind of starting from backwards. Like you start with the big block and you chisel down, right? And perfume you kind of build out.
Right. But I think it's good to always take a step back at your fragrance and see like, what is superfluous? What's not actually serving a real purpose here? And I like that. And just, you know, in terms of Gen Z, when we were doing the What is Love, it was just a huge learning that, you know, for Gen Z, they don't want extra stuff. They want a direct message, a clear message. So it's always like a good lens to look at your fragrances through, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you create for that Gen Z What is Love? Maybe you can tell everybody about those fragrances.
So I created a fragrance called Smells Like You, which was really this idea of two people in a couple, like creating eventually their two scents become one and you have a couple scent. You know, you wear your boyfriend's hoodie. He uses your shampoo. You guys share a bed. And there's just like one couple scent that kind of comes out of that.
I love it. Okay. And you're talking about sort of like the process of how you approach fragrance. Do you have like a process that's kind of like your starting point? Like when you get a brief, like what's the first thing you're going to do?
I mean, every fragrance for me begins with an idea, and that could be anything, right? It could be a color. It could be an emotion. It could be a mood board that's been given to you, an ingredient. Obviously, but it everything always starts from a central idea and then you build on that.
And do you picture like do you have an idea of like the key notes and then work like out? Or like are you like, okay, these are kind of going to be the three hero notes I want to work around?
Yeah, but you get to those hero notes not necessarily in the same way, whether it's a color or an emotion, like the process to determine your ingredients could vary.
Interesting. Okay. One thing I'm noticing as we're talking about this, because you mentioned it earlier, you were talking about, that you went to Lycée and do you say you went to the Lycée?
The Lycée Français de New York. But yeah, Lycée, the French Lycée.
So you're French, right?
My mom is French, but I was born in New York.
And do you feel like that? Like, so culturally, you had a pretty French upbringing, even though it was in New York. Did you have more foray or knowledge of perfumery because it is such a French-centric industry?
I think, like, I didn't realize it growing up, but yeah, looking back, you know, going back to France every summer and going to all the perfumery stores, there were just many more perfumery stores already out there. And I would just collect all the little samples. And my family, again, it's stuff you just realize after the fact, is a very fragrance-centric family. Like, in France, they all wear fragrance. They don't leave the house without it. They have, you know, the aftershave, the cologne, the everything is very heavily fragrant.
It's just interesting thinking about, like, the cultural, you are a multicultural person, and I know you, so you went to perfumery school in Paris. You now are in New York. You grew up in New York. And in between all this, you also spent time in Munich, right?
That's right. Yeah. I was an evaluator at Drome in Munich, a company that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes. But is now Givaudan.
It's now Givaudan. And I started off an evaluation in Munich and did their perfumery school program there.
Okay. So that's where you went to perfumery school. And as we're speaking about cultures, I'm curious, like, are there things stylistically that now that you've had experience with perfume in France, in New York, in Munich, that feel like this is a distinctly French style, this is a distinctly American style, this is a distinctly German style?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, culturally, even bread is different in each culture, right?
So let's talk about bread.
It's a food group in itself.
Yes.
But so just something as basic as bread that every culture has in common has their own interpretations. So of course, fragrance is the same. And yeah, when you're working on global projects, you do kind of like, oh, I know. I remember, like, in Germany, this was really liked. I smelled a lot of this around me. Yeah, so you do kind of pick up on these cues.
Like, what would you say is, like, a German cue? Or a French style.
Yeah.
Or
in Germany, there's, like, a lot of softness, a lot of muskiness that, you know, seems simple, but is actually very complex to achieve. Mm. So it's just super interesting to play around with it and, yeah, understand these cultures a little better.
What feels unique about American perfumery?
I was going to say bold, but that's not even the case. I think a lot of perfumeries are bold around the earth. There's a big, big emphasis on freshness, I would say, which is really always fun to play with and reinvent. So I have a blast with it.
Yeah, like, what are some notes that you like to use to incorporate freshness in your creations?
I mean, you can do it so many ways, like with citrus, with green notes, with earthy notes, with, you know, going really earthy, raw, fresh. You can go aromatic. There's just so many options. So freshness is always a really fun field to play in.
Oh my God, Smell Club tickets will be on sale this week. Now, I know I said this week, last week, but it's really happening this week. So stay tuned. And as I mentioned, there is no new episode next week, sadly. So if you want any updates from me from Smell Club or anything else, make sure you are following on Instagram at Perfume Room Pod and are subscribed to my mailing list. You can DM me on Instagram if you want to be added. Let's get back to the episode. You work across, it seems like, every category, right? I mean, so what are the types of things that you are perfuming?
Yeah, so I work from anything from EDTs to candles, soaps, reed diffusers, done shampoos, lotions, and it's a blast. I love working on a lot of different applications. I think you can learn so much from the challenges you face in one and apply those learnings to a field where those aren't challenges, but it brings newness.
Yeah, like, I'm curious, going back to this, like, freshness thing, if we apply it to what you're talking about, like, does freshness mean something different in, like, home care versus personal care?
Yeah, but they still have a lot of room to explore in each of them. But it also depends on the brief, I'd say, because freshness, you know, do you want a fresh fruity? Do you want a fresh floral? Then you could really play.
Is the starting process similar or different if you're, like, going from fine fragrance to a reed diffuser?
the process in terms of like finding your idea and really sharpening the idea is the same, because you still want to know in the end what you're trying to convey. But the materials you're going to use and the approach might be different, because obviously there are some technical challenges that you might encounter with one application versus another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for candles, for example, the burning alone.
Yeah.
Like, stop, you can't, you have to think of flashpoint, what is smoky, what really pushes through the wax, versus fine fragrance. Some people might think it's easier because there aren't any technical challenges, but I also think there's nothing to hide.
That's true.
There's no base that you could use as an excuse. There's nothing to hide that could, you know, you have to be on point and very precise.
When you're testing fine fragrance, is that something that you test on like a lot of different people's skin just to get a sense of like, generally, it works on most people? Because obviously some fragrances just aren't going to work on some people because of their skin chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, we generally do smell on a few people, and I wear them extensively just throughout different times of the day, different parts of my week, just to see if they hold the route.
Speaking of like testing and candle testing, what's the process of testing a candle?
Yeah, I mean, you have to let it age because it needs that little special magic needs to happen between the wax and the fragrance. You smell cold, then you burn them. And, you know, we have a fantastic facility where we have very controlled rooms, so you're able to reproduce same conditions in every booth, which is fantastic. And yeah, but then you're smelling, you go, you know, you could either open the door, the little window, or you just step into it. I love stepping into it. Clearly, just want to live in fragrance.
Yes.
And you just experience it. And then you also have to put your critical hat on. Do I like it? Is it beautiful? What does it make me feel? But like, okay, is there smokiness? Do I see a mushroom?
Is the mushroom like the wick? If it like,
yeah, when it starts like making a little shape,
you really have to like use a lot of science behind it. It's not just about the scent. It seems pretty difficult.
It's fun though.
Yeah.
Challenges are opportunities to grow and be creative.
Hey, I love it. I mean, so you're saying you love living in scent, and I know you test perfume on your body. Do you live in scent at home? Is your space scented? Tell us about what your home smells like.
Ironically, it's very unscented because I have a husband that is allergic to a lot of things. And so he doesn't
damn
really
allergies.
Love.
They'll
he
get
doesn't
you.
Love having fragrance around. So I tried to keep it fairly neutral. It'll probably smell a lot like coffee because he's a big coffee drinker.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's out of town, I have like special laundry detergent from France I use.
Only when he's out of town?
Yeah. On all my clothes, I buy huge bouquets with scented flowers like the lilies and freesias, just anything that's on the market that's scented.
Mm-hmm.
Burn candles everywhere. Yeah, like,
wow.
My personality is able to invade the house.
Wow. Okay. I love that. And that's actually, isn't that going a few steps back? Because I think you had told me this before this recording, but that's what brought you to Munich, right? Like he was stationed in Munich?
Yeah, he was stationed in Germany. So we had a long distance relationship or long transatlantic relationship.
Wow.
And after a while.
That is very difficult.
It was. But, you know, we're still together 18 years later.
18 years
so
later.
I guess it was
Congrats.
Worth it.
Okay, so eventually you're like, all right, I'm going to go out to Munich. And that's what brought you to Drome in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, kind of scary because I was an evaluator. I was in evaluation at IFF and within their team. And I knew all the people. They were lovely. And it's really intimidating to start over and not know, you know, if you're going to get support, if you're going to make it. So it was a big dive for me, but I'm glad
It's amazing you were able at least to find like a fragrance job internationally too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, was it in German or English?
So, yeah.
Like, do you speak German too?
I learned it there. Yeah. But that was definitely interesting that I think when I got there, they had changed, but just a few years before, I think even the Kardex, like all the ingredients, were still in German.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is really a big change.
Yeah. It's a language that it's not, you know, I spoke Spanish, like the Latin languages, you can kind of make it work if you speak one.
Right.
German, like, I mean, even numbers are backwards. The way the sentences are phrased or the verbs at the end. So it was just a lot of mind gymnastics.
Wow.
But it was great. You know, again, like it's an opportunity to grow and to learn something. And that's never a waste of time.
I agree. Okay, so what are some of the creations for people listening who want to explore some candles or home care or perfumes you've created? What's on the market?
Fun collaboration I had was with Tori Burge. And this was actually during lockdown.
Oh, cool.
And we developed what I like to call my COVID baby. And it's called Electric Sky. And it's in the Dream Collection, the Essence of Dream Collection. And that was just a really fun collaboration. Again, I was pretty new to Givaudan at the time. So
you started at Givaudan in COVID, right?
Yeah.
That's also wild to me.
Yeah. But, you know, I had a really supportive team. So it was as easy as it could have been. But yeah, I learned the systems and I learned a lot working on Electric Sky.
What does that one smell like?
So that's a fresh floral. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of, it's got some citrus notes, a little bit of aromatics, and a big woody piece as well, like mm-hmm. Palo Santo and vetiver.
Lovely.
Steven Nielsen and I collaborated on a fragrance for Millie Bobby Brown called Wildly Me.
I didn't even know she had a fragrance.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah. And that
oh,
was
I gotta
a
try
fun,
that.
That was really fun. Developing with her and doing the Zooms. You know, her family was with her right there. It was just really a fun time and a beautiful fragrance that I love creating with my colleagues. So that's always an extra.
What is that like when you're collaborating on a brief with another perfumer? Like, do you divvy up who does what? Or are you just like responding to each other? Like, how does that change your process?
Yeah, it depends. You know, sometimes someone's on vacation, so you just kind of pick up where they left off.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're just both working together as we go and really seeing like different interpretations of an idea and pushing each other. You always learn. And that's my favorite part.
You're mentioning Steven Nielsen and you're mentioning starting when having a very supportive team at Givaudan. Have you had any key mentors in your perfumery journey?
I have to say, I've been so lucky just in, you know, the 15 years I've been in this industry. So many people have been so kind. Whether it's, you know, smelling a blotter of a creation I made when I was just starting and training, or someone who bought me blotter holders when I went to Izipka, just as a little, he's like, this is what you're going to need when you're there. Or I had a perfumer in Germany, Barbara Zoblein. She's still with Givaudan as well. And she helped me move my stuff out of Germany back to New York. You know, I mean, this community, it really is just so special because they go above and beyond and support you in so many realms of your life. And I feel like it's very special.
That's really nice. The last question before we move to the final segment of the show, this has been so fun chatting, is what's something you're looking forward to?
Oh, I mean, right now I feel like there's a renewed sense of adventure in fragrance and just a curiosity from the consumer as well as you know, willing to take a risk from brands. So I'm excited to see like where and how far we're willing to go. I know with Givaudan we're working on the Haute Parfumerie exhibit and we've created fragrances really looking towards the future, and I've even surprised myself where I've landed on those. So I'm excited to see what my colleagues have developed. And we also have perfumery school students working on it. So I can't wait to smell what the students are working on. The sky's really the limit.
Is there anything else that you can share about what this Haute Parfumerie exhibit is going to be?
It's a whole review of of perfumery through the ages. So there's a whole historic piece as well as looking towards the future.
Cool.
And, you know, Givaudan has a very rich heritage in fine fragrance and in haute parfumerie. So that's why we're really showcasing it.
Very exciting. Something to look forward to. Okay, Christine, we have a final segment. It's called What's That Smell? Rapid Fire Scent Association. I throw out people, places, things, emotions, whatever. You tell me the first smell that comes to mind. Are you ready to play What's That Smell?
Let's do it.
What's that smell?
Christine, what is the smell of your childhood bedroom?
Oh, I love this question. My French laundry detergent.
You really miss that laundry detergent.
Love it. It's actually the one that my aunt uses in France, and I bring it back every time I go see her.
It's like a little like niche, like from a local place.
No, it's a big brand, just they don't sell it here.
What is the smell of love?
My mom's perfume. Rive Gauche.
Rive Gauche. Yeah. I love that. Okay. What is the smell of New York City?
Central Park. So the leaves in the fall and some nuts in the street.
I love it. What is the smell of Munich?
Pretzels.
What is the smell of a Zipka?
Raw materials. Just like a mess. The lab was filled with just so many raw materials. And we would, you know, we were students, clumsy, spilling them all over. And then you would carry these little drams of scents, and then they would like explode everywhere in your bag. So there was always like a big mix of everything when you're learning. You know?
Well, that's kind of like going back to your high school memory of spilling the, I don't even remember what the molecule.
Yeah, benzaldehyde.
And is benzaldehyde a molecule used in perfumery?
Yep.
Wow, really full circle. Okay, final question. What is the smell of Christine Hassan?
I think it's musky, ambery, and fresh.
Beautiful. Christine, this has been so lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time. Where can people follow you if they want to learn more?
Christine_Hassan_perfumer.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Christine.
Thank you so much, Emma. This is really fun.
This podcast was edited by Joe Leonardo. Music is by Max Vernon, and illustrations are by Israel Rodriguez.